Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lutz, and joining me in studio today is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Shetty.
Yes, that's me.
How are you guys doing on this blisteringly hot Joburg Summer's Wednesday?
It feels like it should be a Friday.
It does. It really does feel like it should be a Friday. I've been saying that all week, Robin.
So hot. I just want to go lie down.
You actually have a reason for that because you've been traveling for most of the week. You have just come back from Cape Town where the Gartner Symposium was being held.
Yeah, that's right. So that's essentially the, I guess, African venue that Gartner likes to use every year for the symposium slash expo that kind of goes around the world.
Yeah.
And just so that was the Cape Town leg. It's currently still underway. It wraps up today, Wednesday. But yeah, I was there on Monday and Tuesday and got to kind of get a feel for what Gartner, which is a global research firm, kind of what their feelings are for tech trends and what CIOs in particular need to be worried about
So what tech trend should we be cognizant of?
Yeah, so Gartner went through 10 strategic tech trends. I don't want to go through all 10 of them because then we'll be here for a very long time.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I wanted you to just highlight maybe 3 or 4 that I thought are really, really interesting. The first one was around hyper-automation.
Hyper-automation.
Oh, an adjective.
Yeah, so it's essentially automation, but just...
Hyper.
Hyperized, if that's a word. So, as we all know, that automation is kind of there to take care of those repetitive or almost redundant tasks that a machine could easily take care of.
Yeah.
And it kind of frees up space for your employees. I know that it's also one of the more divisive trends, specifically as it could lead to a loss of jobs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fear around that. And when it comes to hyper automation, it's essentially looking at every aspect of the business, and anything that can be automated will be automated. Which again, obviously raises a lot of fears around, will there be a massive loss of jobs as a result of this?
I mean, so on that point, like one of the things that I've heard just at conferences and from experts is that what companies need to do is, while you are automating with artificial intelligence, machine learning, robotics, whatever it may be, what you should be doing at the same time is using your workers for more valuable human-focused tasks,
yep.
You know? Like, put the humanity back into work, as it were.
I know we've chatted a bit about the mining industry in particular. There have been talks around automation in that field specifically, and a couple of companies we've chatted to are really talking about reskilling their workers, which I understand, but also it could prove quite difficult, especially if you're talking about an industry like mining, where the skill set is quite focused in particular. So I'm not too sure how that'll work with that kind of industry.
Well, so for instance, like just looking at mining, for instance, like you could have automated like robots in the actual mine shaft and then have a miner operating a virtual reality system where they are in control of that robot per se. You know, like the miner has the skill and the knowledge of knowing like, oh, I shouldn't dig here because it's going to cause a collapse, where a robot might not have that knowledge. You know,
I'm all for those kind of solutions.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think you also have to think about how many miners are going to be able to reskill for that kind of purpose.
Fair enough.
I think hyper automation is obviously a very interesting trend, but it's also, for me at least, is one that raises a few issues and concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the next couple of years. And I should also mention the tech trends that Gartner have outlined are for 2020.
Okay.
But the guy that was presenting it, Mr. Brian Burke, he kind of explained that it won't necessarily be fixed to 2020. These could develop at different rates over the next 2 to 5 years.
But we'll start hearing like utterances of them in 2020, like for IR.
Yeah. It was fantastic. All right. So the next one they're chatted about is multi-experience. And that kind of tied in quite nicely to the keynote that was delivered on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
They spoke about a concept called the everything customer, and how companies need to kind of gear their products or the delivery of their products to these everything customers. And how they kind of framed it is that the everything customer is a customer that wants everything brought to them. They don't necessarily meet the product or service another place. They want those products and services to come to them.
Yeah, I don't like leaving the house, so I think I fall into that category.
Yeah, that's spot on. I mean, the example they gave is locally anyway, in the fintech space. We know that obviously South Africa's fintech space is probably the most mature, one of the most mature in the world. And they mentioned that our banks, they didn't give a name, but they say one of our banks has 7 different ways for you to kind of transact and interact with them.
Yeah.
Another one was a pizza company. There are 15 different ways for you to order a pizza.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
That's what people want. Brandon.
Fair enough. I mean, I understand it because, like you say, different ways, different people use different methods of ordering, and I suppose you want to be able to capitalize on all of those customers.
Yeah.
That sounds really predatory, but I mean, that's what business is about, though. You want to try and, like, make sure your brand is the one that people go for. And if I want to order a pizza in my way, which is not speaking to a human, which is online.
Automated, yeah.
Completely automated. I don't ever have to deal with a human until they hand me my pizza. I'm cool with that.
You could even have a drone deliver a pizza.
I don't trust that because have you seen what happens when you don't deliver a pizza properly? It turns into a mess.
Yeah, so just kind of one last thing about the Malty experience. They also mentioned that along with kind of delivering as many experiences as possible for the everyday consumer, it's also important to ensure that those experiences are uniform throughout in terms of the quality.
Okay.
Because you obviously don't want a poor experience on browser, but a good one on your app, for example, yeah, or on Twitter or LinkedIn, whatever you want to use for your service. So that was a rather interesting one. I think we'll probably see that one develop a lot quicker than, say, the others.
Yeah.
Another interesting one was human augmentation. So we're not talking about...
There you say.
No, we're not talking about...
Can I get arms to punch through a wall?
You probably could, but I don't think you're talking about this with this specific case. So there is the physical and, I guess, the software side of things here. Mm. So on the physical side, it would be, for example, using exoskeletons for people in manufacturing industry, for example.
Okay.
So if you're putting together a car and it requires a lot of, I guess, repetitive tasks that also could lead to possible injuries, things like that, an exoskeleton could help with that, especially if working long hours.
Fair enough. I mean, that makes sense, like especially in an industry like that, like where you could have one dude pick up a car using an exoskeleton. I'm sorry, that was the first thing that popped into my mind.
So my understanding of the current batch of exoskeletons is that they're not made to, you know, like Ben said, lift cars, but it's just supposed to not reduce injury, but take some of the physical tax out of the work.
That's great.
And I've also seen a few of them where it's designed, the only thing it's designed to do is when you lean down, it takes the pressure off of your knees and your lower back. So did they talk about that non-powered exoskeletons, or did they talk about powered exoskeletons, or did they not make a difference?
So the example they gave was, I believe it was Ford. So they had a video of a man that was working on the underside of a car, and he had an exoskeleton essentially around his shoulders and arms, and he was working underneath the car. So I guess I think it's more focused on repetitive tasks. You won't, for example, be lifting the car up and and doing those kind of
things.
Maybe
in the future.
And then on the software side of things, this is where AI is going to play a huge part. They're going to use a chat, again, I guess also links to augmentation in a way, in terms of assisting your employees to do certain tasks that would otherwise be repetitive or mundane, and kind of freeing up that space to do other things. So yeah, I think probably the software side of things is probably when we see more develop more quickly than the exoskeletons, unfortunately.
Damn. Come on, guys. All I want to see is a human lifting a car on their own with one hand.
You can get some strongmen to do that.
No, not that. I want in an exoskeleton, Clinton.
Well, you'll have to make it yourself, Brendan. I can lock you in a cave with a box of like
okay,
old
no,
computer
this
parts.
Is getting this is getting very dark now.
Okay.
I am no Iron Man.
Yes.
So I guess sticking with cars for a little bit, one of the other trends was autonomous things. This was kind of touched on quite a bit at last year's symposium. But now the example that Burke kind of gave was specifically around autonomous vehicles. And I'm not sure if you guys know, but there are different levels.
I did not know.
To autonomous vehicles. So
I did not know this.
The highest level at the moment is level 5. That means that it's a completely driverless vehicle.
Okay.
And
so would that be like the UAV drones that hit the Saudi pipelines?
I can neither confirm nor deny any such
thing. Anyway,
I think Burke kind of joked about it, but I guess, like, for example, when you see those visuals of people sleeping behind the wheel of Teslas, for example, that's that's not the kind of thing that's probably level 4.
Okay.
Where it has driver's capabilities, but there still needs to be someone behind the wheel at all times.
Right.
And he also obviously advises, and we also advise, do not sleep behind the wheel
of your Tesla.
Literally illegal, and you're not supposed to do that. Don't put oranges in the steering wheel to mimic your hands. I don't know if they've patched that out yet. Anyway, so what's level 3 then? Did they go?
So level 3 obviously just goes a little bit a level below that. So it's driverless autonomous driving in very specific circumstances. So, for example, parking.
Oh, okay.
Or if you go to a specific area and then you allow the driverless tech to take over and handle the driving of the vehicle. And it's those level 3 vehicles that are going to see a lot more of.
Okay.
Over the next few years.
Well, I mean, we are seeing them quite a bit. Or am I mistaken? Like, I feel like every second new car has the ability to self-park now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Gartner's numbers have it at around, I think, in the low teens.
Oh, wow.
In terms of how many manufacturers are going to start doing level 3 autonomous vehicles between now and 2025.
Okay.
Yeah, so... And I think another thing we need to mention just around that whole level 5 level of autonomous vehicle. Burke was quite... wanted to stress that for those kinds of applications, you're going to need a controlled environment. And what he means by that is you can't, for example, have level 5...
On the road.
Yeah.
I was going to say...
For example, you can't have that kind of thing.
The road is like the least controlled environment in human civilization. So that's a problem.
Yeah, so I would assume you'd have to have an entire fleet of level 5 autonomous vehicles in a specific environment for that kind of system to work.
So like something in an airport, say, you wouldn't need to have drivers because you could have autonomous vehicles that ferry like baggage from the terminal to the plane.
Yeah, that would be a great example.
Maybe like a shuttle that goes between the drop-offs and the
Something like that. Like you say, a controlled environment. But so we wouldn't see level 5 on...
Not anytime soon. I'm sure in our lifetime, but not the next.
In our lifetime, you say? That's interesting.
I believe so.
I think in our lifetime, it might have high adoption rates in first world countries. I don't know about here, though. Driving is pretty scary when you think about it for a few seconds. We got one person who doesn't have much training, just driving this tons of metal that can kill you at any second. It kind of freaks me out every time I get in a car, but I just kind of... put it in the back of my mind, and the sooner we can replace that with computers, I'll be happy.
Yeah,
I don't know why people are so skeptical, because even if the computer systems aren't infallible, I will always trust that more than some person who got their license 30 years ago and hasn't had an eye test in a long time and can barely drive, and it's just dangerous.
Yeah, I think that's kind of alludes to his point about having a controlled environment.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about some guy who's sleeping behind the wheel on a level 3 autonomous vehicle.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are some of the trends that were mentioned, and we're going to have a full list of all 10 that you guys will be able to read as well. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So something that has happened in our lifetime is Borderlands 76 Anthem was released last week.
Why you gotta be like
it has been... True. I've been watching the terrible, terrible way the release has played out online. But Clinton has actually been playing it. So how's it been, Clinton?
So just to clarify, I've been playing Borderlands 3, not the made-up name Brendan's been using. And, oof, my lord, it's probably got the worst performance I've seen in a game in the last 10 years. The last time I saw a game this badly optimized was Warhammer Deathwing, which was like a AA game made for a very niche market in the Warhammer 40K fandom. Oh, my lord. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Download the game, very big game. Only on Epic for now. It's coming to Steam sometime in the future, which, you know, that's a problem, but it's not the biggest of problems. It's once you're in the game. So the weird thing is, once you start the game, it's actually such a good first impression. I think they actually spent some time optimizing the starting areas.
Yeah.
But when you first start playing, you're like, holy hell, this is a lot of fun compared to the other games. I just played pre-sequel. I didn't replay all of it. I played a few hours of it just to get used to the controls and stuff again. And once you load it into Borderlands 3, your character is so much more snappy in the way they move. You got a lot more, you don't have as much movement opportunities as you did in the pre-sequel with the zero grav, but you can, it feels like you're more agile, and you know that just feels better once you're on the keyboard and you're moving around. You also got stuff like if you jump from a high enough ledge, you can do a ground slam with your knife and everything. And then the shooting just feels so much crisper. It's really obvious that they spend a lot of time looking at their core combat and saying, how can we make it better? And they've really put more time into just like aiming down sights and shooting things feels better and more responsive. And the first weapon they give you, they really highlight some new functions that they have, which is alternate fire. A lot of the guns in the games have some kind of alternate fire mode. So the first gun you get is a normal pistol, but then it's also got zip missiles, I think they're called, where you press C and then you can shoot missiles. And then that has its own little cooldown, so you can't just spam that. And then other guns have simpler stuff, like switching between full auto and semi-auto or burst fire. And then some of them have two different elemental effects. So you can shoot electricity static, then you switch the alternate fire, and then it's corrosive damage. So they've put a lot of thought into how all of this works. And the new characters are a lot of fun. So I've been playing as Mose, which is a character where you have a mech. That's your ability. You jump into a mech. It's very much like D.Va from Overwatch. Yeah. And I don't say that just because it's a character that can summon a mech. It's just like even the animation for getting into your mech, because it kind of materializes out of nowhere when you jump in. It feels a lot like how it works in Overwatch. But I'm not complaining. And they've also put thought into how you can customize it. So your mech has two arms, and each arm can have a different kind of weapon, or you can have the same kind of weapon in both.
Okay.
So I like having two machine guns, chain machine guns, and then you can even get an ability where if you have two of the same, you get more damage.
Okay.
But there's a lot. There's three main ones and then three sub ones. So there's six different weapons you can put into each arm. And then even for the other characters that aren't Mose, there is that customization. Like I think Zane, if you don't like using grenades in this game, you can just replace your grenade slot with something else.
Oh, that's cool.
And then the other two characters also. There's a lot of customization. And the core gameplay is where they put in the most time. And everything else has kind of been left by the wayside. So the first thing that I was alluding to is performance. So like I said, the starting area was really good. And I was happy with it because I heard horror stories about how bad the optimization is. And then I unlocked the rest of the map, and it just tanked. It absolutely tanked the performance. And then I unlocked, I don't want to spoil
it. When you say tanked, what do you mean? Was it like frame rate drop or?
So the there was a massive frame rate drop. And on top of that, it's not even micro stuttering. It's just outright stuttering. The menus are extremely laggy, which is a big problem because this is a looter shooter.
Yeah, you need to be in and out of your menus.
The menus are horrendously laggy and slow. The menus also have a lot of bugs where like the image of the gun or item will just change into something it's not. Sometimes you'll drop an item and it will still be in your inventory for a long time. Sometimes you'll change a setting and the game will just lag out badly for a few minutes. Some people have been having a lot of crashes. I've only had two so far. One of them was to the desktop. One of them was, my computer's completely locked up. I had to do a hard reset, and my computer had to go into safe mode to do a disk recovery. There are the in-game benchmark is useless because I used it, and it's like, you're an 80 to 90 FPS. Great. I get into the actual game, and it's just, I wanted to use an expletive there. It's just absolutely terrible. I don't know why Gearbox put out the PC requirements list. I don't know why they put an FPS count in the game. I don't know why they put in a benchmark in the game when all of them are meaningless because they have no direct correlation to how the performance is in the game.
So one of the things that I've been seeing online is people with the RTX 2080 Ti graphics card struggling to get 55 FPS.
So they're probably playing at a higher frame rate.
Yeah.
But, not a higher frame rate, a higher resolution. They're probably shooting for
4K,
4K or 1440p. I've just been trying to do 1080p and I've been struggling with that. On top of poor optimization on PC, I'll get to console in a while, in a little bit, but on PC, on top of the bad optimization, it's also called De Novo.
De Novo.
It's got DRM. Now, I don't know the specifics of how it's impacting your PC, but I've heard that it needs a constant 2 megabit connection to phone home and make sure you're not a filthy pirate. So that impacts your internet connection. And I can hear it's really abusing my hard drive that the game stores on. It's really hammering that thing, reading and writing. And that is a problem we've known with the Novu, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
People were worried that it actually increases your disk, you know, life.
Yeah.
And I can't speak to those things, but I can tell it's eating up a lot of my bandwidth, and I can tell it's hammering my system for no real reason. Now, those two things, I don't know how much they're affecting, you know, raw performance, but it cannot be helping.
Yeah,
it really can't.
Absolutely.
And then you go on console where there's a lot of the same problems. People are struggling to run it on the the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X at the higher resolution that they promised. It's been a shit show there. The performance on the base consoles has been fine, a lot of people have been saying, but there's a lot of problems there too. The menu lag problems are present across all consoles and all PCs. And on top of that, on console, I've also seen there's a lot of input lag.
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
What? How can there be? Or why?
And we're not talking about like the input lag that is present screen is like a 1 millisecond response time.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about online play. Like, hey, when I do co-op. When you're doing single player on your own, you press right and you can see the input lag. Like your character doesn't immediately move right.
Doesn't move until you take
your
finger off
the
button.
There's so many problems with this game, and there's also, it's not even just performance. Like the audio has been, it's got some of the worst audio mixing I've seen in a game in a long time. If you're not like half a meter away from a character and looking directly at them into the whites of their pixelated eyes, the audio just doesn't work properly. If you move slightly backwards and slightly to the left or right so your cursor's not pointing at them, their voice volume just absolutely drops until it's almost inaudible. And then there's other things, like explosions are sometimes too soft, or if you're in a big firefight where lots of things are going off, the game just has no idea how to correctly manage all those audio levels. Ooh. And it becomes a mess. And the worst thing so far, because of its implication, is when you get hit by an elemental effect, your character will moan because, you know, it's supposed to be an audio cue that you're being damaged over time, you know, dots.
Yeah.
And it sounds like messed up porn. There's no other way to go around it. If you're hearing this from the other room, it sounds exactly like porn. And I was speaking to some people in the community, and they said this was a big problem. No, it's fine. I mean, they said this was a problem with the character Gage in the second game.
Yeah.
Cage or Gage, however her name is pronounced. And they're like, why didn't you guys fix this? And now it's a problem across all characters. And I got into a fight with this one boss, I don't want to spoil his name, but he uses all electrical attacks. So for 90% of the fight, your character is just screaming. And the moaning is so much louder than everything else. And I had to turn off my audio because it's, one, it looks ridiculous to the people in my house listening to this. And two, it's just annoying.
It's annoying, yeah.
And then there's just so many things where it's very clear they did almost no QA for this game. There is, I don't mind spoiling this because it's an inconsequential side mission, where you go into VR. Now, when they said you're going into VR, I got excited because VR missions and like drug missions where your character's drugged, in recent years, they have come into vogue where the developers can kind of go wild, right? Because they're not tethered to the reality of the game. And even in Borderlands, which has a very loose reality, you think you're going into this mission, they're going to go wild, right? The color palette's going to flip. There's going to be giant projections and everything.
We're going to be in rage all of a sudden.
It's going to be all
rage
weird.
Too, I mean.
And you know what they did? They put a blue pixelated filter over your screen, and then your mission took place in the same map as a previous mission. So they just recycled it with a blue filter. And I wouldn't mind, but for some reason, this blue filter almost halved my FPS.
Oh, wow.
And it made me sick. I don't get motion sick from games, but it was absolutely nauseating. For some reason, the way they did this filter and the scan lines and the pixelation, whatever, it made me utterly ill. And again, because we got our review copy as a retail copy on launch day, I've been able to speak to other people who have been playing the game and other people in the community, and they said, yeah, I had the same thing. Even if my FPS didn't drop and the performance suffered, that mission made me sick. I either couldn't finish the mission, or I just stuck through it and I felt terrible afterwards.
Damn.
It's very clear that they just you know, I don't want to accuse anyone of anything, but it feels like there was zero QA put into this. It's absolutely horrendous. And on top of that, all the old Borderlands problems are still here. Like, the mission quest, the mission design and the quest are just so boring. It's just go here, shoot this, collect 10, beat the boss. There's, like, no inspiration in it. And on top of that, this is something... So those things, I think, are quite objective. The performance is bad across a lot of hardware, and the quests are rather boring, but this is more subjective, and it's the writing and the humor of the Borderlands game. So a lot of people have said they've never liked it, and Borderlands 3 is maybe not the worst, but in present day, it just feels dated and everything. I want to ask you guys, have you played any of the Borderlands series?
Yeah, I played one or two of them.
And you, Robin?
Not my cup of tea.
What do you think of the quote-unquote humor in Borderlands?
I feel like it's very try-hard. Okay. That's whenever I hear Borderlands dialogue, I feel like it's very try-hard.
So I agree with you, but I don't know if I've kind of been inoculated from playing. I've been playing since the first game. I don't know if I've been inoculated to it, but I don't mind it. And this may be because I just came from Daemon X Machina, which has probably the worst story and writing in the last, like, decade.
Yeah.
That game was so bad. I would take Borderlands' try-hard humor over Daemon X Machina's terrible anime trope writing any day of the week.
Yeah.
So I don't mind the humor. And I must admit, I have laughed at a few of them. One of my favorites is that for certain enemies, if you kill them, a trigger might come up where they say, like, a death quote. And one of them was like, "My chili recipe dies with me," and then he dies. And you guys didn't laugh at that, but I had a good laugh because I was, like, in the middle of a fight.
Yeah.
And then this guy just sprouts this random thing. And I thought that's funny. And another one was, like, in the game, if you die, you get resurrected by a machine that, like, makes a clone of you instantaneously. And one of the tooltips was explaining that, and then it says you can't die unless you're in a cutscene. And that kind of made me laugh, because in a lot of parts in this game, people get shot once and then they die.
Yeah.
But, like, an hour earlier, you were taking rockets to the face and you weren't dying. And I was like, what is going on here? Was this ludonarrative dissonance or something like that? So I don't mind the humor. I don't think it's good, but I think it has its moments. But I don't think it's so horrendously bad that you need to, like, in your review say, I don't like it. It's a real shame, because the core gameplay of shooting stuff, using your abilities, and then picking up new guns is fantastic. But everything around it is either middling, like the writing and the humor, to bad, that's the quest design, to horrendous, which is the performance. Now, the thing is, you can't really... I think you actually can change the writing. I was going to say you can't change the writing, because you can with DLC. I think if you play this game in a year from now, which is, like, what everyone recommends, wait for the game of the year, they're going to patch the performance, hopefully. They've already said they're working on it. They're going to add DLC, which may have expansions which have better writing. And the expansions also might have better quests. But I have to review the game that we have now, and I can't recommend it. If I honestly believe that if I bought this game and I didn't get a review copy, I would have asked for a refund. Now, that's a whole nother can of worms, because the Epic Store has a very loose refund policy that's very difficult to enforce. But I would have probably gotten a refund on this. And it's just a shame, because, like I said, I think hidden beneath everything there is, like, an almost perfect FPS looter shooter. But, man, it's just weighed down by everything. And I don't know, I'm going to write my review soon, and I don't know how much longer I need to wait for, like, for performance patches and stuff like that.
I would say wait a week. And, like, if you can't address performance issues a week after launch.
Yeah.
Has Gearbox said they're going to do anything about it?
They've put out a vague tweet saying, we've heard you, we're going to address quality of life issues and performance issues.
When you buy the game of the year edition.
When's that it really feels, a lot of people use this term, but it feels like you're playing a beta, but it kind of does. And I hate to say that, because it's overused and it's sometimes far from the truth, but this feels like the people who have bought it on day one have just taken a gamble and it's not paid off. And I also want to add on top of this, right? People usually say when I bring up PC performance, oh, it's not working on your system. But I've tried it on my PC. I've tried it on my gaming laptop. I've spoken to Sahil, who's one of our writers who does commercial work for us. he's had bad performance on his AMD-based PC, and he's had bad performance on his Intel-based PC. So I have first-hand knowledge of four different PCs, and if you go to the Reddit community for Borderlands and you look on the bugs and problems megathread, there are thousands of comments about how bad it is. So I'm going to give it a little more time. This coming Friday, I'll have it for a week and I'll write my review, but it's not looking good, and it's a real shame because I think underneath it's a really good game. Yeah, that's Borderlands 3. Hopefully it gets better.
He is hoping that it gets better than Fallout 76 and Anthem, which I have both given up on. But anyway, moving on to something a little bit scary, I guess you can say. Last week, Thursday, Garmin South Africa announced that its shop.garmin.co.za website had been hacked. And then the company proceeded to keep quiet for almost 24 hours. So we were alerted to the news of this hack via Twitter. A user posted a link to the web version of the alert that Garmin had sent out to its customers. And basically Garmin said their credit card numbers, expiration date, CVV codes, first names, surnames, physical addresses, phone numbers, and email addresses were all contained in the data that was stolen.
That sounds like everything.
That really, is really important
pretty
stuff.
Much everything. We then frantically tried to get hold of Garmin on Thursday afternoon, and because it was the end of the day, offices were closed. So we endeavored throughout Friday to get comment from them, and eventually late on Friday afternoon, the firm responded. Just to give you a bit of an update in that regard, less than 6,700 customers were affected by this data breach, although calling it a breach is a little bit difficult. Essentially, what Garmin disclosed is that its website had become compromised through malicious JavaScript. Oh, no, they didn't say JavaScript. My mistake. Had been compromised, and this is what they said. While Garmin does not store credit card information, the unauthorized party leveraged virtual skimming technology to capture customer details at the time of input, including credit card information, the firm told Hypertext. So this was on Friday with their statement. So essentially what had happened is the website itself had been compromised rather than Garmin's database. And when customers keyed in their details, an attacker was able to grab those. So the way that it's described is has led many to believe that it was a Magecart attack. Magecart kind of targets the Magneto back end, and these attacks have been growing throughout the year steadily. In July, 2,000 of the biggest websites in the world were hit by Magecart attacks, so it's not uncommon. Essentially, an attacker installs a skimmer onto your website by compromising it, and then as your customers key in their information, they are able to grab it. Unfortunately, because this is credit card information, you can't do much about it except cancel your credit card if it starts to get used. It's unclear at this stage whether anybody has been affected by this data theft. But yeah, if you have used the shop.garmin.co.za website recently and you used your credit card information to key in information, you might want to keep an eye on your bank account just to make sure nothing goes wrong there.
Yeah, so I've got three questions.
Yeah.
None of which I'm sure you'll be able to answer. But one is, if it's less than 6,700, does that mean it's in the 6,600s? Two, why was, and we've been following the story with you last week, why was Garmin so nonchalant about everything? And three, have they contacted those 6,600, we're assuming, people?
Okay, so let's work backwards. They have contacted the 6,700 customers, the less than. I don't know what the exact figure is. They didn't disclose either. I would assume that because they say less than 6,700 is like 6,698
or
something like
that. Yeah, I was going to say one or two people down.
Yeah, it's really just one or two usually in that attack. Then in the nonchalance of the approach to this. So just to give you a bit of a peek behind the Iron Curtain, on Friday morning at 8 o'clock, I started calling Garmin. I requested to speak to somebody regarding the data hack. Nobody was in. I then contacted, I then discovered that you needed to talk to the marketing team. So my next call to them, which was about an hour later, was asking for the marketing team. No, they're not in yet.
TGIF.
An hour later, I called again. The entire marketing team was in a meeting. An hour later, I called. They were still in the meeting. An hour later, they had all gone off to lunch. Eventually, at 1 o'clock, I managed to speak to somebody at Garmin, who was able to tell me that they are unable to comment until the international office comments. And this is where I kind of had a bit of an issue with Garmin. I understand that they are an international company and they can't say anything with without go-ahead from head office.
Sure.
But you are a company in South Africa and your customers that are South Africans want answers. And you send out an alert and then you don't say anything for 24 hours.
Yeah, that's a...
It looks really bad, Garmin. I'm like, fair enough, they responded the next day, the next evening rather, at around 6 p.m., but that's not good enough, right? We are, like, just recently we had City Power hit by a ransomware attack. While it was a very scary thing to happen, City Power handled that like champions. They were in contact with the press. They had submitted statements. There was always an update from City Power.
Can you believe that a part of the like local infrastructure did something better than a private company?
And that's what I'm trying to get at here, is that the impression it gave to me when Garmin was kind of not responding to press the next day and like just refusing to take questions. Although they weren't refusing to take questions, they weren't answering questions at all. Was just, well, you know, we need to wait for somebody else. But that's not good enough, guys. You are a company that is dealing with South African data, the data of South Africans, and you just don't care about it. Like, I mean, customers are concerned, and all you have to say to them is, "What's your bank account?" No, mate, I was on your website. You need to give me something then, something better than "What's your bank account?" No, unacceptable. Garmin needed to be a lot more active in how it addressed this. And to me, sitting as somebody that looks at these sorts of things, it just didn't seem like they had a plan in place for this sort of thing. It just seemed like they were hit by an attack and there was no, they didn't know how to handle it.
Well, the alert seemed very boilerplate.
Very, very boilerplate. I mean, it was literally like, there's been an attack, here's what's been taken, watch your bank accounts. And it just wasn't good enough. And I think that like companies in South Africa need to stop this, oh, it will never happen to me mentality, because it is going to happen to you. You are going to be attacked at some point.
It's probably happened, you don't realize.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes it's attackers have been found on networks having been sitting there for 90 days before they're discovered. Right, that's the average around the world, 90 days. You think your little firm that's running no firewall, no antivirus, you think you're safe? I think you should really take a look at that. And I hope that this acts as a wake-up call to all South African companies that your data and your customers' data is very, very important. And if something happens to it, you need to be on that, like, stink on cheese. All right? So Garmin, like... I mean, there's not much you can do now, right? You have to just watch your bank account, and if something happens, I'm sure you can approach Garmin and say, hey, my details were compromised in your system. I'm not 100% sure. But it was a message to me that South African companies do a lot better in this sort of thing, in dealing with these issues. I'll have links to the stories at the bottom of this post. If you have used the shop.garmin.co.za website recently, I would advise checking your email for an alert to see if you were one of the less than 6,700 customers affected. And yeah, hopefully South African companies start taking data privacy and security just a little bit more seriously. Just a little bit, guys. Seriously, this could have been handled so much better. Garmin could have come out looking like the good guy, but it just felt like they didn't know what was going on or how to handle it. And it's a pity. But yeah, that's going to do us for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to the AfriCast. As always, links to all the stories we discussed are at the bottom of this post. And until next week, my name has been Brendan Zachary. And thank you, Clinton Matos.
That's always been my name. Bye, everybody.
And Robin Chetty.
It's been a pleasure. Cheers.
See you next week.